Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Bellingham podcast. We hope this message will be informative, inspirational, and helpful. Donations to support this work are greatly appreciated. Visit www.cslbellingham.org and click on the donate button. Remember to share our podcast. Thank you.
I'm Heidi, practitioner of the day, helped today by Wanda and Andrea Wood. And you also see shawls on a few of us here. I see Kayla's kit. And we are prayers. Come to us, and we do prayer. I think, yeah, there's the different ways listed up here that you can access prayer. One easy way is put a prayer request right back there in the vessel. I was going to say urn. And on that note, let me offer us all a prayer. I am grateful. I'm grateful to be here, above ground and breathing. This present moment is a beautiful gift for us, and I settle myself into it right now. Knowing I can leave all my challenges and troubles and worries, set them aside on the altar of love. Let God do God's work. And so I just enjoy this blessed life that we are all a part of, and spirit is the center of it all. I allow that peace of spirit, that power, and that beauty to be fully upfront and present in my mind today. That is the truth of who we are. Thank you. And so it is.
You heard a few weeks ago from me, or maybe months ago. I can't keep up with it because this coming every for 10 days every month just throws my whole sense of time off. But I told you the story about the Golden Buddha. You may remember it, you may not. I'll refresh your mind just really quickly, and because I want to go from there. So the Golden Buddha story is that in China some years ago, there was a great clay Buddha that they were about to build a road right through the place where it was sitting in this temple space, covered over. It was covered over because if it got rained on, the clay, the stuff it was built out of would dissolve or get messed up. So they had to move it because they were building a road. So they came in, they moved the big Buddha. It was tall and big and heavy, and they took a crane and they lifted it up and they set it down on another platform further away at the same time, about the time the monsoons were coming in, the heavy rains. So they set it down. They set it down too hard and it cracked. Cracked just a little, and they went, oh no. So they covered it with tarpaulin so they could keep a tarp over it. They could keep it from getting too wet and too rainy. Anybody else remembering this story yet? Okay, good. So I'll go slower. I'll go quickly through the story. So you know the story. So what happened is then there's a crack, and during the night, one of the monks comes out and looks under the tarp to check on it and make sure it's not dissolving or whatever, and he notices a glint, a light shining back from the flashlight. So the next morning, the first thing he does is get his other brothers out there, and they start really looking at this to say, okay, what's going on? And they open it, and they start chipping away at some of the clay, and what they discover is underneath that clay is a golden, solid golden Buddha that had been covered over 1,000 years before when another group of Buddhists were coming in, marauding and tearing things up, and you know, whatever they did in those days. And so they tried to protect it by covering it over with clay so it wouldn't look like anything valuable. And over the many years, they forgot about it. And then they just rediscovered it. So I told that story then as to get the idea that within each of us is the Golden Buddha. Within each of us is this pure, beautiful, spiritual self that is right there, present all the time. Do I need to switch mics, or are we okay? Okay, we're good. You can hear me. You can hear in spite of the echo. Okay, you got it. So anyway, underneath that, for all of us is this divine, beautiful, perfect, spiritual being that we all are. We just sang about it. Thank you, thank you, thank you. But what we don't usually talk about is the clay, the clutter, all that stuff that covers it over. So I want to share a little of my story with you today. I don't know if I said tonight, whatever time it is, wherever you are listening in out there somewhere. I want to share a little of my story, and as I'm doing this, I want to invite you not so much to be, oh, wow, this is Bob. That's not why I'm telling it. I'm telling it because I know my story is not that different from yours. The individual events are probably different, and some of the characteristics and things that the clay is created of is different, but it's still a similar story. So as you hear this, think about your own life and the growth and the things that you've perhaps chipped away and let go in order to reveal the light within you that is much bigger and much brighter than maybe you ever, ever imagined. So the first thing I want to say about all that is there's some ideas I learned early on. Somewhere somebody told me, don't shrink wrap yourself. I did. And I shrink wrapped myself because I felt too big. I mean, I'm not a little guy. My mother was this tall. My father was this tall. My sister is this tall. And here I came. Too big. And I heard that again and again. You don't know your own power. You're too big. You could hurt people. Be careful. And so I was careful. And I walked like this because I didn't want, I just looked around. They loved the fact that I could reach things on shelves that they couldn't. But, you know, the rest of it was just a real challenge at times. And I always felt like I'm too big for the world. There's too much of me, and I need to make myself smaller. Anybody relate to that? Make yourself smaller, you're too big for your britches. You ever heard that one? I rarely am these days, but anyway. Yeah. We heard all those kinds of messages about being too much and being too big and being too, which really only meant that I was more than they knew what to do with. It wasn't about me being anything wrong, but it took me a while to figure that one out. I had an uncle. My dad died when I was young. I was 7, and he was my primary support. He was also my biggest challenge. And I knew that when he died, I knew I was on my own. And I had to figure out, how are you going to make it? How are you going to live? What are you going to do? And my grandmother, bless her heart, she was doing her best. She was trying to help my mother. So she had a nice long talk with me that I needed to stop crying so much. Because I needed to man up. Well, she didn't use that word, but that's what she meant. Because I was upsetting my mother. And so I had to play like I didn't feel. So I figured out the only way to survive, first of all, is to figure out what other people want and do it. Because as a little kid, you don't have a whole lot of power. But I had the power there. So, man, I was the best little boy you ever met. I was the best little boy in the world. There's a book with that title that tells my story, but I didn't write it. So, I was like, I was perfect in Sunday school. I went to church. I took my Bible every time. I even listened to my grandmother and didn't put it on the floor because, my gosh, that was the sacrilege. I mean, I tried to be so perfect and do everything right, and it didn't work. I still felt awful inside. So the other part of this is along the way there, about when I get into my teenage years, my uncle, who I was working for, long story, I'll tell the short version, basically, I kept showing up late for work because I was working with him. I was digging ditches and getting, he was a plumber electrician and I got all the crap work. So I was doing that for him and getting paid whatever he paid. At the time it felt like a lot of money. But I always was late. And he was yelling at me about it one day and I said, well, you know, this is just who I am. I'm just late. I'm always late. It's just who I am. I just have to accept that, and so do you. grabbed me by the collar, backed me up against a tree because we were outdoors, held me up so my feet didn't touch the ground. He was the only one in the family that was as tall as I was, or taller at that point, and said, "That's a bunch of BS. You can be anything you want to be. You can be anybody you want to be, and you need to quit saying and claiming those limitations." Ka-chink. You know, at that point, a little piece of that stuff fell off, and a little more started to show up of who I really was. And I took that, and I've carried that my whole life. I've written to his old family. I wrote to his old family when he passed away, all of his kids. He had a bunch of kids by getting married a bunch of times and marrying women with kids already. And anyway, I sent him all letters about that and that story because it was so important for my ka-chink. The other thing I learned, I didn't learn it till my daughter was a kid, is, you know, there's a great philosopher who is also used to do children's programs until he misbehaved and he can't do them anymore. And that was Pee Wee Herman. Anybody remember Pee Wee Herman? Well, what I learned from him that was so important and helped ka-chink was, I am rubber, you are glue. Bounces off of me and sticks to you. Don't ever forget that. If you don't remember anything else from this talk, if you take that with you, because right now in the world where people are throwing stuff at each other all the time, don't let any of it stick. I'm rubber, you are glue, bounces off of me and sticks to you. Of course, we know metaphysically that's the truth. Here's what Ernest said about it. Ernest was, I don't know if Pee Wee knew Ernest or knew about Ernest. I doubt it. But Ernest said, nothing is real to us unless we make it real. You know, I'm seeing that so well. If you listen to one primary news media or another, you have a whole different reality based on what seemed real for you. Ernest said that in 1926 or 7. Nothing can touch us unless we let it touch us. Refuse to have your feelings hurt. My dear mother, bless her, that was her power play. You just hurt my feelings. Yeah. She was trying. She did her best. Refuse to receive anyone's condemnation. In the independence of your own mentality, believe and feel that you are wonderful. You are wonderful. This is not conceit. It's the truth. Now, it is true, if you go around saying that to people, they might think you're a little weird or you're a little conceited, but that's their problem. I'm rubber. You're glue. Bounces off of me and sticks to you. So, I'm going to run out. Yeah, okay, let's keep going. So, I grew up, I got married, I did all the good Baptist things. I was a Baptist preacher. Don't hold it against me. I'm healed. And but part of that healing was discovering that I could be mad at God and it was okay. Now, part of the result of that being, there it is. Part of that result of being told by my dear beloved grandmother, don't cry, is that I didn't. Not where anybody could see me for many, many years. And then I found out I've been doing all these things right as a good Baptist boy, and I got diagnosed with some kind of thing on my lung when I was about 30. Oh, my God, my dad died when he was 30. I was about to die, I thought, and my grandfather had died. I mean, it's just all this crazy history, and I was so mad at God. And I finally was driving home from a therapy session one day, and I pulled over on the side of the road, and I pulled over, and I got out, and I shook my fist at the sky, and I started screaming, I'm so mad at you. I did everything right. I've been doing everything the way you told me to, or I thought you told me to, or they told me to, and it's still, here I am with the diagnosis. Here I am about to get, you know, kicked off the planet. And I was so mad. And then I started screaming and hollering, and then I started crying. I was 30 years old, almost. And at that point, I started shedding more clay. At that point, more clay, more clay, more clay. Yeah? It didn't stop there. I kept going. I got into a 12-step program, and I learned a lot about life and how to live, and that was good. It kept going. I'm not going to go any further. I don't want to. We'd never have anybody come back. But I did decide at that point that if I could live another 30 years, I would be true to who I am. And part of taking off my shirt, wearing my pink, is I came out. I stood up and stood out and said, you know what? I've been trying to fit into this little box. It's not who I am. I love men. I love women too, but differently. I found out that out in high school, I loved my buddies the way I was supposed to be loving the girls. And I shut that down and closed it off and didn't tell anybody for years till I came out for my honeymoon. This is the other part of the story that I think is fun. For my honeymoon, my wife and I went to New York to work for a program called Youth Development Incorporated. We were working with kids in the inner city. We got there on June the 17th, 1969. Anybody knows what that means? We were staying in the YMCA. They put us in the YMCA and on the married floor. So we were on the married floor. We still had to use the separate bathrooms, and I saw things in there I had never seen before. And came downstairs the first day, newspaper stand. Remember newspapers when they were paper and things? Newspaper stand said, "Gays riot at Stonewall." It took me another 12 years to come out. But it was like God kept throwing me these little hints, little cracks, little things that kept pulling off and coming off. I went back 20 years later and marched in the parade celebrating Stonewall with my then college-age daughter. And, you know, she wore a big T-shirt that said, "My dad's gay and I'm proud." And I wore a T-shirt, "I'm gay and I got a straight daughter." We got interviewed. We got interviewed on TV. It was wonderful. Little short, you know, 2-minute thing, but we got there. Life is unfolding, you know, and what became so powerful for me and so important for me is that I was able, through this teaching, because I discovered the teaching not long after I came out, I discovered Science of Mind, and because the Baptists didn't want me anymore, you can bet on that, and so I didn't want them, so it was okay. But when I found this teaching, I began to hear some things that sounded like my uncle talking. My uncle grew up in a house where there was a full set of Emerson books that my grandmother had the complete works of Emerson, and had read them. And despite being a good Baptist, or sort of good Baptist, he was also very much into the Emerson thinking, and he was speaking it to me long before I knew it. The first time I went into Science of Mind Church, Emerson was quoted at me, and I'm like, "I'm home. I'm home. This is where I belong." Ah, yeah. And so, this big second phase of my life is where I began to discover that I might as well be myself because everybody else was taken. You've heard that 1,000 times, I know. It's true. Emerson said this: "There's a time in every person's education where they arrive at the conviction that envy is ignorance and imitation is suicide." I was trying to figure out how to live my life by imitating other people, by being envious of what they had or didn't have, and envious that I didn't have it, thinking I couldn't possibly. And then I walked into a Science of Mind Center, and my God, he said, you know, if somebody else that's human can experience this, so can you. I never heard that before. I also heard, if you don't know what to do, don't do anything. Ain't that it? I mean, instead of figuring out what other people are doing, just don't do anything until you know what you want, until you're inside of yourself and living in that space. Wow. And I learned all the other principles, and I took classes, and I did all, I was still being the good little boy, but I was being a good little boy to myself, not to other people. And so I marched in the streets, and I waved flags, and I protested what needed to be protested, and I helped start some of the beginnings of the AIDS services in Atlanta. A group of us got together and started taking food to our friends who were dying and began to build that, and now it's a huge multi-million dollar organization, and I'm so grateful for having a tiny little part. We weren't trying to start an organization. We were just trying to feed our friends. You start where you are and what your heart tells you to do and what your innards tell you it's time to do. And then I started hearing these. We believe in God, a living spirit almighty, one indestructible, absolute, and self-existent cause, and the one manifests itself through all creation and is not absorbed in its creation. It manifests through all creation. Everything is God. Holy moly. Even the people I don't like. That was especially them. Exactly. Especially them. It's easy to see it in you guys. Holy Moses, talk about a love fest. This is amazing. But what about out there? Can I see it in them? Yeah. We believe in the incarnation of the Spirit in all people, and that all people are incarnations of the one Spirit because there's only one. I'm skipping around. We believe in the unity of all life, that the highest God and the innermost God is the same God. That transformed my life. All of a sudden, all that God stuff I'd been studying made sense because I'd been studying it as out there, and it wasn't. It was right here. We believe in the healing of the sick through the power of the mind. We used to. Not sure we believe it as much anymore, although I think a lot of you do because I've heard your stories. We believe in the eternal goodness, the eternal loving kindness, and the eternal givingness of life to all. We believe in our own soul, our own spirit, our own destiny, and we understand that the life of all is God. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. You know, those things are so powerful and so important, and they so were part of me changing my life that I have lived them ever since. I never imagined I would be doing this. First time they asked me to get up and talk about anything, my mouth got dry and I couldn't talk, and my throat closed up, and I had to sit back down. I did some other things along the way to learn how to speak and do better. But, you know, the important piece of this that I want to just keep saying is it's automatic that gold inside of you, that design inside of you, is going to break and come out. And inside of everyone else. And there are opportunities, if you notice them and take them, it is simply waiting to be recognized. So at some point in your life, as in my life, you're going to find that you can put on a whole new idea and live a whole new life. This is the most expensive jacket I own. I won't tell you how much I paid for it originally. It's linen. And I wore it for about 20 years until it got stained and ugly and couldn't be done anything else to. And a friend of mine who does painting on fabric said, "You got anything you want me to paint?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And so I paid the same price again just to get it painted. And I said something I didn't know until I was fully into this teaching. I'm worth it. You're worth it. Whatever it is you need to do for yourself, you're worth it. And you do find a way. And know that the givingness of God is there for all of us always, all the time. Live it, enjoy it, celebrate it, because you are wonderful, and so am I, and so it is.